that a flying disc has been found and is now in the possession of the Army.
Sounds really good to me. Okay, we'll assume it's friendly anyway, okay?
There's two of them, and they
stayed
the exact same spot
the
whole time, but I'm sorry,
like,
say that.
Oh, my God, I hope that's a plane. Oh, Jesus, please be a plane. Oh, please. All right, Lisa, how are you ready for this?
My cameraman said, what the hell is that midway across the Hudson River? Was it perfectly circular? Yes.
That
thing just hovering sort of 100 yards away.
For the first time in our history, we're studying something that's studying us.
Nobody told me that this ain't like this.
Suddenly, something else flew into the frame. Fired a beam of light that struck the dummy warhead, doing a circle, if you can imagine, circling our warhead. Fired another beam of light at it, which struck the warhead.
The Virtually Strange Network presents Strange Days Indeed, your premier source for UFO information, with your host, Errol Bruce Knapp.
This is edition 406 of Strange Days Indeed, the program that observes and reports on the phenomena that surround one of the greatest mysteries that humanity has ever faced, UFOs. Unidentified flying objects. Julian McNabb driving tonight and on the program tonight, Dave Ferlott with his take on it, East Coast correspondent Don Ledger, and rejoining us for the first time in many, many months. Actually, about 26 months, would you believe, John Velez, abductee activist, will be with us tonight. And we will spend the second hour of the program reintroducing you to John Velez and what John is about and what has brought him back on this program. Not enough abductee voices out there on the radio, on the TV. If you're listening to us around the world, welcome. Good to have you listening on the podcast, too. Interesting stories on the UFO news wires this week. In Armstrong, British Columbia, for instance, in the Okanagan Valley region, where reports are typically very rare, a pilot saw a crop formation on July 31st, making this the first known and reported crop circle for 2006 and the first BC formation since 2004. There were none reported last year. The design is circular with branching pathways. It's in barley. It's approximately 30 meters or 100 feet long in the middle of a field near the edge of winter wheat crop, which had already been cut. There are no obvious tracks initially seen in the thick crop. And apparently a second pilot confirmed the formation on August 2nd. Jack Noble, the farmer, has a young Dalmatian dog who wouldn't go outside starting in late July, which is very unusual for her, apparently. She just sat there on the corner of the lawn looking in the direction of the formation for the next 3 or 4 days. So dog spooked by whatever was going on out there. And an interesting little synchronicity, a new Canadian Crop Circle Research Network British Columbia research assistant, Joanne Noble, went to investigate the formation on August 8th. She doesn't have a computer, apparently, at home right now, but had a hunch to check email at the library, which she rarely does, where she saw the first email notice about the formation. She said she thought the field and farm in the aerial photo looked familiar somehow, but wasn't sure. She had been in Armstrong when she was about 4 years old on her grandparents' farm, but couldn't remember much about it. And as it turned out, the formation is on that same farm. And the farmer there now, Jack Noble, is her uncle, whom she hadn't seen for over 20 years. And this was also the first formation that she'd been to. She was going to go up there anyway when she first heard about the circle, but it was a real surprise to find out it was her own uncle's farm. And the pilot who first saw the design also happens to be a friend of the farmer's family. Interesting synchronicities. I love those coincidences. Thanks, Paul Anderson of the Canadian Crop Research Network, for that report. In Bedford Basin in Nova Scotia, a woman and her husband saw a saucer-shaped object with blue lights hovering over the basement on August 1st at around 10:50 in the evening. Said it made no sound and it sat there for about 2 minutes, occasionally going up and down vertically. Flashes of light kept going off underneath it that wasn't lightning, as it was a clear night and it was confined to just underneath the object. Then the thing took off. Our thanks to Brian Vike, director of HBCC UFO. And in Livermore, California, an interesting story. Between Kern County and Bakersfield, which is out in the desert there, a band was on tour, and the reporting witness, the singer of the band, told Peter Davenport in New Fork, the National UFO Reporting Center, that her husband was driving and one of her guitar players was awake. It was around 11:30 in the evening when she saw something leaving the ground, she said, just like how an airplane takes off, only 100 feet away. And then she realized that they were in the middle of the desert with nothing around. She pointed the object out to her husband as it was climbing up into the sky. Blue lights came on and then white lights, and it started flying in a circle, spinning upside down and twisting crazily. Nothing spins like that, she said. She freaked out and began to cry, and her husband almost hit the car next to them. When the object was done twisting, it flew right at them. The white lights looked like a car. It then turned back and flew back real fast. Guitar player said, it's going to crash, but it didn't. It came back up and just hovered. And as they were driving away, it was still hovering above the ground. They woke their bass player, drummer, and second guitar player, who were all totally freaked out, too. Our thanks to Peter Davenport of the National UFO Reporting Center for that report. If you want to go take a look there, it's ufoRC.com.
These are strange days indeed on UFO News Radio. Here with his take on it is Dave Furlock.
There's a thread on the UFO updates list called UFOs or Not, and it brings into question the quality of data that has been compiled on UFO sightings. The thread was begun by Hollis Kimball, and he claims that the UFO updates list is basically just a forum for arguments about what is fact, fiction, or otherwise when it comes to UFOs. He throws down the gauntlet by stating he has some credentials and would be interested in discussing some of the real cases within ufology. Our friend Hollis does not bother to state what he believes would satisfy his criteria for a case being real, but he states, are there UFOs? Yes. Have I seen any? Yes. Do I know what I saw? No. Am I a credible witness? Absolutely. Not like the Kenneth Arnold case, a hoax. Not like the Rex Heflin case, a hoax. Not like the Socorro case, a misconception. The Roswell case, Well, as you can hear, he proclaims that the Kenneth Arnold case is a hoax. Now, please note my usage of the word proclaims, because to my knowledge, there is nothing that points to Kenneth Arnold pulling any kind of a hoax, unless you speak to some of the believers of the Great Pelican Theory. And our learned friend does not offer any evidence to prove Kenneth Arnold's sighting as a hoax. He merely proclaims that it is. The thread has generated a lot of responses from ufologists, much more knowledgeable than I, and they quickly point out some of the errors of Mr. Kimball's thinking, including the fact that even the U.S. Air Force's Project Blue Book did thorough investigations and came up short on better than 20% of their cases. And they are an organization that has a vested interest in ufology and much more resources to throw at any investigation than any ufologist or group of ufologists. Now, ufology is something that's ongoing. Occasionally, new information comes to light about old cases, and that information goes through serious scrutinization to be validated or discarded. What continues to happen, however, is that new cases come to light on an almost daily basis somewhere in the world. The information is recorded, hopefully, but more than often than not, it doesn't get reported because someone decides they don't want to be laughed at. In the reported cases, the case is examined to determine if it is a case of mistaken identity or something else, and then either it becomes an IFO or UFO. What Mr. Hollis forgets is that important images, tapes, audio, and even trace evidence of the UFO phenomena exist for all of us to see, hear, or look at. But we don't have the ashtray or the discarded Coke can to examine. We're not even sure that even if we did get one, that we'd be able to prove it came from another planet. We're not even sure if we can prove that UFOs are coming here from another planet. What we do have is a lot of circumstantial evidence and some pretty compelling witness testimony that proves something is happening out there. The circumstantial evidence points to some of the UFOs being some kind of spacefaring craft that appear to be under the control of some pretty intelligent creatures. And I say creatures because we once again deal with reports from some pretty serious people talking about beings that are completely different to anyone that lives on this planet. UFOs or not? Oh, there is no doubt whatsoever that we are dealing with unidentified flying objects. The question should be, what are the UFOs that are moving through the skies of this planet, and why can we do nothing about them? But that's just my take on it.
Dave Furlong, every week at this time. Strange Dave, indeed.
We always get the new guys on the UFO updates list, Dave Furlott, who just vertently or inadvertently set the cat among the pigeons, you know, and it all starts all over again, just as we get all those ruffled feathers settled down and things go along quite quietly for a week or two, and then it all starts again.
It's always the way it is. Somebody comes up, I kind of got a chuckle out of the proclamation that he made in regards to a number of the cases. It was just sort of like, hello?
Yes, and it's inevitably the new guys like Hollis Kimball who can't seem to organize their email programs to function properly. So new on the list and new to emailing, I think, is the way that works. It's been fairly interesting, actually, the UFO updates list the last week or so. Quiet for a little while, a couple of months this summer, but it's picking up again. You can tell the X has started. The minute we start to get over 25 posts to the list, you know the exhibition started in Toronto.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what that has to do with the price of bacon, but it's a weird one. I've been doing the list for 10 years now, and I noticed that. August 17th, 18th, and it picks up, and away it goes again. And that's when the people who signed up over the summer and who've been getting, you know, 9 or 10 posts a day, suddenly the numbers go up to about 25, 26, and they start sending me emails saying, oh, you're flooding my mailbox. I can't take any more of this UFO stuff. It's just too much mail. Please unsubscribe me. Well, stick around until sort of September, October, November, and watch the numbers go up to between 35 and 40 emails a day.
Oh, yeah.
I think we're up around 65,000 posts to the UFO updates list in the last 10 years. As I've said many times before, it's a PhD if you start from message one and work your way through up to date and understand it all.
You had to put in that disclaimer, didn't
you? Yes, you've got to understand it. Pick a topic, any topic, any subject. Go to virtuallystrange.net and click UFO updates there. And then right there, there's a Google search right on the front page of the list. And if you drop any key search word there, you're going to get hundreds of posts about that particular topic with UFO updates.
In regards to that, newbies that are joining the list should probably check out some of the key ones that Mr. Kimball has mentioned, such as Socorro.
Oh, yes.
Or do a search on Kenneth Arnold, or do a search on Roswell.
It's not like we've never discussed those things before. So what's going on with you, Dave? Is your book any closer to my hands? Can I see it soon?
You're talking about the one that's been sitting down at the publisher in New York for a little over 2 years now?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, every time I call them, I think I'm up to phone call number 10.
Mm-hmm.
I keep getting, it's in editorial, and it is still looking good.
No, it's not. It's starting to yellow.
Exactly.
Dave, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
You got another book going there? Or you?
I'm working on a couple at the moment. So
we'll talk to you next week, Dave.
For sure.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Don Ledger is an author, he's a UFO researcher, and pilot living in Halifax, actually outside Halifax, Nova Scotia. He's written 3 books, Maritime UFO Files, Swiss Air Down, and along with Chris Stiles, Dark Object, the investigation into the Shag Harbor UFO incident. Don is also the Canadian Tech Affiliate for the National Aviation Reporting Center on Aerial Phenomena, NARCAP, which is based in the States. Joining us on the line is Don Ledger. Good evening, Donald.
Good evening, Errol.
Mr. I'm writing for Fate magazine now, huh?
Yeah, we all do sooner or later, I guess.
And interestingly enough, the front cover of the current Fate magazine, have you seen it? But right on the front cover of this month's Fate magazine is a Mountie.
Yeah.
Mounties face the paranormal. And a great article by Scott Corrales on the return of the Men in Black in there, too.
Yeah.
Do like Fate magazine. It appeals to all of the things that I find interesting. I usually read it on the subway and the bus on my way in and, you know, home and back through the month.
Phyllis Goldie talked to me down in, I believe it was in Henderson, Nevada, when I did the UFO conference down there a couple of years ago in November. And she asked me if I sent in an article or two, and I said, sure. And then I completely forgot about it. And then it crossed my mind the odd time I should do one. You know, she did ask me. This one was I sent that in was a couple of months ago, but it takes a long time to take it out in the stands.
Yeah, it takes a few weeks to put the issue together, yeah. And then it has to be printed, and then it has to hit either our mailboxes or hit the newsstand.
Supposed to be out, I guess, probably this week coming or the week following. It normally comes out like 2 weeks ahead of the month it's supposed to.
Can you pick it up on the newsstands down your way?
Oh, yeah, sure.
It's a small, compact size like the Reader's Digest.
Reader's Digest.
A wonderful little mag, and it's been around for many, 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 many years, and they have some great archives which they constantly dip into.
The article I'd done on this one, just to touch on, is to do with the Condon report that through Defense in Great Britain, their big UFO solve. Or
a little earlier this year, the Condon report. Yeah.
There's quite a bit to do with pilots and UFOs in this thing, and they actually tell them to stay away from these things because they're dangerous, even though they don't exist.
A couple of interesting stories on the updates list. What, just yesterday, wasn't it?
Even today.
Even
James
today,
Smith
yeah.
Has one on
James
here.
Smith, right. If you're interested in UFOs and pilot reports, then suggest you go read today's postings at the UFO updates list.
Exactly. Well, I think what triggered James Smith, his was about pilot sightings and how they just seemed to get a big yawn from air traffic control and the FCC. And he wondered why pilots report what appear to be rockets coming up, going past their aircraft and so on. That might happen in the odd occasion, but I suspect that the pilots are being coy there, as they do with sometimes with weather balloons. They want to get the report off, at least make an incident report, but they don't want to say what they really think it is. I'm not saying in all cases that's the case, but what triggered that was over Hilo in Hawaii, that supposed rocket that crossed over the airport there 2 or 3 days ago, I guess it was, with estimates of only about 6 feet, made an awful noise, had a contrail, which pretty much sounds like a missile.
Most UFOs that we hear about do not make noise.
No, exactly. And if this is the case, his question was, if they're going to report these things, are they going to tell us what they are after? And I don't think they are, because, number one, it would be embarrassing, obviously, if it's a rocket. Unless it's a handheld by a terrorist, which I doubt in this case, then it's probably a stray that got away from some kind of a military exercise. That's going to be embarrassing. And if it isn't, it's a regular UFO report, well, you're going to get the same treatment the UFO reports get from the government and been getting them for the last 30 years. Nothing. They don't bury it, they just ignore it, you know. So I figure that's probably what's going to happen.
It's like Pan Am...
What, Flight 800?
Flight 800 could have actually ended up reporting a rocket going across its nose instead of coming down off Long Island.
7 or 8 pilots said they saw what looked like a rocket.
A missile,
Some of those pilots were ex-military who'd been in Vietnam. And they know what a, because they dodge them themselves. You know, you don't know how to take these things.
Yeah, it's really hard to know, isn't it? Is it the captain of the aircraft that files these reports?
Well, it can be anybody. Anybody can refile it.
Well, why is the predominant description rocket-like?
I don't know. I think it's a way of getting the thing on the paper somewhere, without actually saying, well, this thing really wasn't a rocket. It's
more like
in some cases.
Flying cigar.
Here's the problem right now. The airlines of the world are having such a problem now because of the terrorism. The airlines have their hands full just trying to get people to come on airplanes. It's been happening ever since 9/11. It went down and now it's coming back up. Now you keep getting these terrorism reports, you know, maybe it could have been liquid bombs on the airplane.
How long does it take to make one of those liquid bombs? About 5 hours in the can with the temperature down? Come on.
But the point I'm trying to make here is, if you've already got this problem and you're scaring people off airplanes again, then it's tough for the airline industry, and I'm sure they don't want their pods on top of that saying, well, you know, we saw things that look like missiles or rockets or anything coming up alongside of our airplane and spooking the passengers. Anything that's going to impact airline travel, they don't want to hear about it, whether it's UFOs or rockets or anything else. It's a pretty touchy industry, and it's been having a hard time for the last 5 years or so. So there's the problem there.
The stupidest darn story I heard in a long time, and there are scientists out there who are just appalled at what's going on.
Yeah.
You know, and it's impossible to make something like that.
I know. The problem is there's that side of it, and then there's our side of it, you know, what we're looking at. There's so much of that to look at, and then you get Hollis Kimball. The Ken Arnold was a hoax, you know, as Dave Furlott is referred to.
Yes.
I mean, you know, just, you know, off the cuff, you know, make a remark like that.
Mm-hmm.
After all of the investigation that's been done over that one over the years, and no indication of a hoax. And this guy all of a sudden purports to have military connections. He's into military intelligence and so on. I wonder about some of these people. There was a couple on there
some time ago
on the list who were, you know, always debunking. Now they seem to have faded out. Now we got another one. It's almost like they're doing a relay race.
Yeah.
You know?
Whose duty is it for the next 6 months?
Yeah,
okay.
Right.
You, HK, get in there.
Yeah, right, yeah. Make stupid remarks, you know.
Yes. Just cloud the issue with unsupported facts.
Yeah.
I don't know if you heard the story at the top of the program out of Bedford Basin.
I lived on the Bedford Basin for about 8 or 9 years. Of course, nothing happened while I was there. Apparently, the sighting took place was about 800 feet away from where I used to live. I don't have ways and means of heightening my visibility so people would know to contact me if they have these things.
Yes, yes. Don't you have talk radio out there?
No, not really. Not that I know of.
Try writing columns for the local newspapers.
Actually, I had started that off, but that ended up being the Fate magazine article. It got too big for the newspaper.
Both you and the Norm have been sending me copies of your mail to each other. Interesting discussion going on there about unidentified submerged objects, too.
Mm-hmm. I think you brought up about the show that was back in February, I guess, that Carl Feint and I and Bruce McAbee and Chris Stiles and I myself.
Yes.
Our segment was Shag Harbor, and it's a fellow by the name of John Waltz who does these productions out of Malibu for the History Channel.
Mm-hmm.
And they show up on there. But as for getting the reports myself, getting them down here, it's been getting hard. I actually picked up a couple of Transport Canada UFO sightings, but the people declined to be interviewed. An object coming in off the water down around Chester Basin and hovered over the car. This is, again, about 2 o'clock in the morning, which is almost very familiar, sort of
yeah.
Like a sighting that happened back at the Shag Harbor, time of Shag Harbor, and sort of frightened them and then turned around. It flashed blue lights and hovered over top
yeah.
of the car and then turned around and went back out over the harbor of Chester Basin there. So that I got from transport.
I don't understand people who report something and then don't want to be interviewed about it. So that you,
it happens quite a bit.
Yeah, it's very strange.
One out of two cases, I'd say, that when you really start to get down to the nitty-gritty where you want dates and times and the elevations and all the rest of it, you know, and the sky conditions and the weather, you know, a whole bunch of other things, and then they just sort of lose interest or they get frightened off. I'm not sure which. They have to know a lot of that stuff in order to try to nail it down if you
yeah.
get a phone, air traffic control, and so on.
Don,
time to go, huh?
It is time to go, and thank you, sir.
Thank you. Say hi to John for me.
Well, I'm sure he's listening down there in New York right now. Good night, Don Ledger. We'll talk to you in about a month.
Good night, Errol.
Good night. And joining us on the line from New York is a man who has not been with us for a couple of years now. I think it was July 2004 was the last program that John Velez did with us. He took a hiatus, and we were talking, I guess, a week or so ago, and John said, you know, there aren't that many voices speaking out for the abductees on the radio. I want to come back. And so John Velez joins us from New York City. Welcome back to the program, John.
It's always great to spend time with you.
It's good to have you back. And you were absolutely right. There's been so little discussion about the plight of abductees over the last couple of years. I guess it's real tough for the abductees out there who relied on you to speak for them and talk about their plight.
I've never felt like I was speaking for anybody else or claimed.
Other than yourself, and you never did, but I've talked to several of them, and they've all said, we really miss John, because John always nailed it right on about the way that we felt about what has happened to us over the years, and even the generations.
Well, it's good to hear that a lot of other experiencers can relate to me, or at least relate to my take on everything, and I don't want to ever give that impression that I'm out, you know, to gather up a following or convert anybody or, you know, convert anybody's thinking or beliefs or, you know, that I'm not out here selling anything. I don't have any website, you know, where you have to pay to get in, or so I don't have any books. I don't have, you know, it's not about that. It's really not. It's a very human issue and a very human thing for me. And part of the reason why I asked if I could come back is because some of the viewpoints that are being expressed, although, you know, everybody's entitled to their take on this. I mean, ufology is considered to be a fringe subject in and of itself. And within ufology, the fringe subject is abductions. A lot of the more serious and sober researchers prefer to concentrate on the more nuts and bolts UFO sighting cases where there may be radar data or testimony from credible witnesses like, you know, pilots and military personnel and like that. But the voices that speak of and for the abduction phenomena are as varied, I guess, as the people presenting the information. And I don't pretend or claim that my point of view or my take on it is necessarily any more valid or better than anybody else's. What I like to think of it as is being a little bit more sober and grounded than a lot of what's out there.
John, we have a lot of new listeners to the program in the 2 years since you were a regular on the program. So let's take a moment or three and just go back and tell the new people your story.
Briefly as I can put, as I can do this. In 1993, I was out in the city with my wife.
In New York.
Having dinner.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I live in New York. And we were in the village and enjoying an evening, you know, window wishing and whatnot. And I hadn't read in a while. I was always an avid reader. And my wife offered to buy me a book, something to read. She said, yeah, I haven't read in a while. So I ended up in Brentano's, which is a really large bookstore, and waddled right over to a back wall, and it turns out that the books in that section were all UFO related, because I had had sightings of unexplainable things in my life. I've always been very curious about the subject, but I didn't really know anything about it. I had never read any books on the subject. I was unfamiliar with anything or anybody connected to it. One of the books that caught my attention had a little alien head on the spine. And I reached for it and grabbed it, and it turned out it was Bud Hopkins' book, Missing Time. And I said, oh, alien abduction. I said, let me see what this is all about. It sounded interesting. And I purchased the book. And what happened was, over a series of nights, I was having trouble reading. I'd keep getting these headaches night after night every time I tried to read this book. And on the fourth or the fifth attempt at having a reading session, I realized that what I was reading, the testimony I was reading, were all things that I remembered in my own life experiences as having happened to me. And it scared me to death. Right away, I started questioning my sanity. Am I going crazy? You know, these people are talking about spacemen, aliens, coming down and coming into their houses and doing this and doing that. But detail for detail for detail, as I read the accounts, I said, yeah, I remember that. Yeah, that happened to me. I remember that, and I remember that, and I remember that. And by the end of the evening, I was pacing the floor in my living room, and I ended up writing a letter to the author, Bud Hopkins, who's a very well-known and experienced researcher in the field. And much to my surprise, I got a certified letter back from him a week later. I didn't expect to hear back from him at all. I had written an experience I had had about 10 or 12 years prior that I thought was exactly like the accounts that were in his book, Missing Time. And if anything, I thought I'd get a friendly letter from the publisher saying, you know, thank you for being a fan or whatever. But it was a letter from Buddy, wanted to talk to me. And from there, developed a long 6-year, 7-year relationship, the first three of which were dedicated to investigating my case and my working through all of this material and cataloging it and pigeonholing it as best I could so that I was still able to function in the world and support myself and support my family and, you know, live a life in addition to having to live with this new reality.
And there are tens of thousands of people who live with that new reality now too, huh?
Well, you want to talk about abduction phenomenon, focusing on the word phenomenon. There was a major phenomenon that happened in the 90s for a period of about 10 or 12 years. Literally thousands of people around the world were remembering these experiences. It was almost as if somebody flipped a switch somewhere and said, okay, remember, and masses of people began to recall these experiences. After working with Bud for several years and exploring a lot of my own experiences, some of which are waking state, I was wide awake, you know, I wasn't in bed and asleep and all of a sudden, I'm seeing aliens and being carried on board a craft. It wasn't like that. I mean, I had experiences that I've relayed on the program before where just walking home from a friend's house, I had a really frightening encounter with a close-up encounter with a UFO, which is this football-shaped light that was hanging over a building on the corner of the street where I lived. And just to kind of put a cap on it, you know, Errol, you've known me for, I don't know, 12 years now or longer.
Yeah.
I never add anything to the reports or embellish them in any way. I try to be like a cop when I tell.
Every time you recount it, it's exactly the same.
I just want to relate the facts of what happened, not how I felt about it. Mm-hmm. I leave all of that out. I just report the facts.
Yeah.
That's just one out of many. But if you just take the bare facts there, you have a UFO sighting, a UFO encounter, in conjunction with missing time. In this case, I don't know, I guess 12 hours of missing time, with physical symptoms following as a result of the first two trained physicians, one of which was a specialist who claimed to have found evidence of surgery inside my head. And I've never in my real life, in my waking life, have had any kind of operations above the waist. I've had two operations on my ankle when I was a young kid, but never any nose, ear, throat, you know, anything like that. And that incident, taken in conjunction with many others that go over a lifetime, eventually convinced me that something very real, physical, was going on, even though I couldn't explain it or what was going on. It was very, very important for me when I started looking into this, looking into my own experiences and trying to put the pieces together, that I remain as objective as I possibly could with the most subjective subject you can think of, the most subjective set of experiences you can imagine. To remain objective and centered and grounded and logical and all the things that I felt I could trust and cling to in terms of, you know, wending my way through what is a very prickly path and stay as grounded as I could, because I didn't want to lose my mind and I was really afraid of that, especially early on. I paid for and had myself psychologically evaluated at that time and took a test that lasted several weekends. I had to go in to take this thing. It was a very long multiple choice written exam and ended up being evaluated by the psychologist that conducted the examination. She complimented me and said that there were some symptoms of post-traumatic stress, but that I wasn't any more neurotic than anybody else. You know, she kind of sanctioned me as a normal human being, functioning human being, fairly in touch with my feelings, fairly well grounded, good thought processes, that I'm not a slake or, you know, out there or in any way, shape, or form. All my life I've been almost aggressively normal. I got up in the morning and went to work and came home in the evening and had dinner with my wife and kids and then played with my kids and got up and went back to work the next day, and homeowner, and I have pets and family that I love and whole real life that's been very deeply affected by all of this.
Yeah, and it's not only you that's been affected by all of this, and not only you that has been through these experiences, it's also members not just of your immediate family, but it's rippled out among aunts and uncles and other members.
It's a multi-generational phenomenon, and it's not just me. See, I'm not even a typical case. There are thousands of people out there who have been through and had similar life experiences, and things happen to them. when I started working with Bud, one of the things I did was bring his Intruders Foundation online and made it accessible to, you know, people worldwide. And I started, you remember, I got hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of letters.
Mm-hmm.
And the letters were almost identical. You could just change the name underneath. It was like I was getting the same letter with different names under it. And all of them experiences and things that I could relate to. I said, yeah, you're right. Yeah, that's right. And then there were people that have a different take on it. You know, there's like this one set of people that feel, and I count myself among them, that there's been some kind of a violation of my life by this contact from whatever the agency that initiates it is. I'm not going to say they're from another world. They could be from right here. Maybe they're an older society than we are. We don't know who or what these things are. We do know from the reports of very credible, just everyday people, family folks that have no reason to lie or make up stories or have anything to sell or are not looking to get their names in the newspaper or their faces on TV or anything. You hear the same reports over and over again, and at some point you have to start asking yourself, well, gee, is there a new psychosis loose in the world? You know, all these people feel like they've been violated and abducted and kidnapped and used, and what's going on with that? And then you have another group of people that have a completely different take on it, that think that the whole thing is a wonderful spiritual process that we should kind of go along with and give into and mm-hmm. attain enlightenment that way. And
as I was saying to Janet Coley a couple of months ago when she was on the program, people are divided into two basic groups who have been through these kinds of things. There are the contactees, and then there are the abductees, and two very different groups of people, two totally different sets of experiences. One is wonderful and enlightening, and they feel that they're friends, and then there's the group that you fall into, who are abductees, who've been used and abused almost like lab rats.
Well, you know, I mean, I've had some pleasant, peaceful experiences in there, too. I mean, it wasn't all medical procedures and stuff like that. I mean, I've had a lot of other experiences that can be interpreted in many different ways, up to and including spiritual, okay? I had one experience that was almost like an initiation that left me euphoric for days afterwards. I was high. I couldn't even sleep. I felt wonderful, like I was going to float away any moment. Regardless of how people label themselves, whether they consider that, you know, like Coley says, whether they consider these are sacred encounters or whether the individual identifies himself as an abductee or a victim of this contact, you'll get the same report from all of them that we're dealing with a telepathic entity. Whatever or whoever these things are, they have the ability to go inside our minds and communicate mind to mind. It's a very direct, very few, you know, abductees will tell you that they talk or that they said such and such. What the communication amounts to and the reports bear up over and over and over again is that we're dealing with a telepathic entity. Anything that can get into your mind and control you is something that you need to approach with extreme caution, not extreme openness and trust. I'd like to posit for the New Agers that possibly this whole attitude of sacred encounters at the expense of ignoring the medical procedures and the physical violations and the taking of semen and eggs from women and all the other really violation-style things that are a part of this whole contact experience, that it's not about them, that all of this at some point, when you reduce it down to its baseline, is about us. It's about humanity. It's about who we are, what we are, and how we relate to each other. And the abduction phenomena, more than anything else, really shows in a way that only race has on a social scale how people can be ostracized, isolated, ignored, because what they're saying or what they're doing or what they're bringing to the table makes the masses or the majority feel uncomfortable or fearful or anxious in some way. And it's a perfectly normal human reaction to kind of, you know, brush something like that away, because it takes your focus away from what you're doing, you know, earning your bucks and paying mm-hmm. your bills and, you know, what does all of this have to do with me? Well, what it has to do with everybody is about, here is a group of thousands and thousands of human beings from all around the world who are reporting the same things, and they're saying something's happening, not just to me, to my family. Something's happening to me, to my friends, to someone I know, to someone I love, to someone I care about. And underneath it all, we're all brothers and sisters and need to start relating to each other that way. And humanity is what needs to unite before we can deal with or respond to or confront any alien entity, agency, or force. We have to do it as a united, single people, which is what we are. And that's not going to happen until we stop creating these divisions amongst ourselves. I know that there's a lot of reason and evidence to mistrust in the world. But for God's sake, when you have thousands and thousands of ordinary family people telling you that something is going on, why in the world aren't our best doctors and psychologists and law enforcement officials and anybody else who has something to contribute, why aren't they involved? Why aren't they investigating this? Why is such a large group of, for the most part, sane, credible people being isolated, ignored, and for the most part, ridiculed? And that's a comment on us as human beings, not on the aliens. And until we get our act together, we can't even talk about them. We can't talk about dealing with them or having a contact with them, because we're so divided and so fearful of each other and mistrusting of each other. So that this is the abduction phenomena, for my money, points at a real human problem, a human condition, a human challenge to us as brothers and sisters in this world, and that we need to concentrate on us, not on these aliens. But in terms of them, we need to look at the facts. And the fact of the matter is that people have been involved in some kind of whatever program they're, or project they're involved in, have been drawn into this thing, much like an innocent zebra in the wild that gets darted by...
Or a chimpanzee in a lab, or a rat,
yeah,
or a dog.
Exactly.
Yeah, John, we're out of time.
Flew by.
I told you it would. It takes a little while to get back into radio again. I want to thank you, John. You're going to contribute on a regular basis to the program, I trust, yes?
Yes, you trust.
Good. Thank you, sir. The Abduction Information Center you can get to via the front page of virtuallystrange.net. Have to rush our buns out of here. Thanks to John Velez, to Don Ledger, to Jim Pacheco in Montreal, Julian McNabb here in Toronto. Pick up the latest issue of Fate magazine, and next month, Don Ledger is in there. We shall talk to you next Saturday night. Good night.
That's this week's edition of Strange Days Indeed, hosted and produced by Errol Bruce Knapp. The executive producer is Dean Mascardelli.